I'd rather be lucky than good. Lefty Gomez.
The most difficult thing I've ever done, by far. I think it took us 17 days, and I had lost so much weight on that trip. I mean, it's just up and down. You're doing a lot. And sometimes you have to cross, you have to hop on boulders the size of cars for half a mile to get to the next like flat meadow where you can, you know, traverse over to something else. It's sort of pick your own poison, and that what's so cool about it is so engaging, you know, and to have that experience with somebody else, to be so engaged in how it really connects you with the landscape, right? You're not just head down, feet are moving, staying within the lines, right? You're being creative out there, and you're kind of choosing your adventure.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the Trail Dirtbags and Hiker Trash. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, let's get to this week's guest, film producer and freelance storyteller, Dylan Harris. Welcome to the pod, Dylan. How's it going?
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate the opportunity to come on here and chat. It's going good. I actually just arrived to Denver. I'm based in Phoenix. So I just arrived to Denver a few hours ago here doing a film premiere actually tomorrow evening. So yeah, life is good, I guess you could say.
Nice. Now tell us a little bit about the film premiere, because I understand that it might involve someone we know here on the podcast.
Yes, that is what I hear. So we're premiering a film. It's called Free Outside, and it's with the iconic Jeff Garmeyer, or Legend, as some people know him. And yeah, 2 years ago, man, 2.5 years ago now, we went out to record one of Jeff's unsupported FKTs. It was on the Colorado Trail. And yeah, it's been a long time coming. We've brought in some reinforcements to put this bad boy together, and now we've got a feature-length film. I won't spoil if Jeff got the FKT or not, but yeah, we're doing our world premiere here in Denver at the Oriental Theater. And it feels good. It always feels good to share stuff. And honestly, this is the longest I've ever had a project in the works. And, you know, working with a guy like Jeff, it's always been my motivation to kind of get his name out there, just me being friends with him and knowing him well. There's a lot of sides to Jeff that I want to get out there in the world. So it feels really good to be getting that out.
Yeah. You said iconic. He is iconic. He is one of our favorite guests. He's been on the podcast 4 times, and each time is just funnier than the last time. He's a strange, wonderful character, and just a great guy. So I'm excited. I texted him when I saw that this film was going to be coming out. I said, dude, you're famous now. And he said, yeah, right. You know, but so it's about his unsupported FKT attempt on the Colorado Trail.
Yeah, correct. And this film actually has a few different sides to it. So that's basically the surface level description. It's on his unsupported FKT, unsupported meaning, if you don't know, he has to carry everything with him. He can't take anything that's not, you know, naturally occurring on the trail. And FKT is a concept, but it's also got its own association behind it. And so there are rules, and those rules have changed since we 2.5 years ago when we captured the film, so that any self-supported an unsupported record, you can't have a film crew. So you can't capture it. You can capture it yourself using like a phone or a selfie camera, something like that, but you can't have a crew out there filming you, or else your record will be disqualified or won't be recognized. So that is kind of, in a way, I don't know, making the project a little bit more relevant these days, because there's some people who have opinions on if that's the right thing or the wrong thing. And through that, I mean, while we were filming the project, there was a lot of things we had to do to ensure that we weren't crossing any lines. And, you know, we did our best to stay as far away from the line as possible. So we would take whatever rules there were and kind of, you know, rewrite them ourselves to stay far away from those. Because the most important thing was Jeff getting his record. The second most important thing was telling a cool story. And so what we had to do was we just handed Jeff a camera, gave him a little lavalier microphone, and had him just journal while he was out there. And on the flip side, a way to kind of enhance the story is I wanted to basically share the story of the crew's experience following him out there. And you know, we didn't have any interaction with him per se, but just like him, we're traveling through the Rocky Mountains from Durango to Denver. And you know, there's its own kind of emotional roller coaster that goes on with the crew as well. So that was a big part of the story.
Well, congratulations on the premiere. How exciting is that? And I can't think of another documentary I'd rather sit down in front of right now than that one you just described. So, after its premiere, I'm really looking forward to getting my hands on it somehow so I can take a look.
I know, man. I wish I could tell you exactly where it's going to land for like public viewing. We don't know quite yet. But that's just the nature of it. This film was self-produced. So, you know, we've definitely had a lot of support along the way, but in terms of like financial backing from brands or, you know, help along those lines, we haven't had any of that. So, you know, I just so much respect to Jeff. This is something he's never done, and it's been cool to see his passion. I mean, he comes from a humble, he's honestly not somebody who likes to be in front of the camera too much. You know, and so for him to kind of just the way he sort of handled this whole project and the way the effort he's put into to getting this story out has been super cool. And so it's been a fun ride, definitely.
Well, I can't think of a better person for your subject matter. In fact, you could probably get a series of documentaries on him. I mean, I've already got it. I've got them written down already. You could do one on the calendar year Triple Crown. You could do one on the Great Western Loop. Now, of course, you'd have to do recreations because these have already happened. But you know, you could recreate some of those scenes and some of the stories from there. You could also do the recent JMT FKT. He was in the Barkley Marathons. You could do something on that. And then I think I would probably most like to see a documentary piece of him as a substitute teacher, which is a side gig that he has. I can't even imagine.
I think that would be a good storyline to mix in for sure. I mean, can you imagine being a kid and having that type of influence? It would be beautiful. I think growing up's all about seeing things from different perspectives, and man, it would be incredible to have him in a classroom. He might not do so well at following the curriculum, though, I'm not sure. But yeah, no, that's the thing about Jeff is like, you know, he hasn't had a camera in front of him. I was just talking to him about this. We just went for a walk a couple hours ago here in Denver. And, you know, a lot of the things that guy has done, that it's there's no sport. There's not a market. There's you know, a lot of things he's done are epic and they're incredible feats that are just world class, but they're mythical stories that exist on podcasts. They exist in his articles. They're stories that are passed on by people. And yeah, he has some, you know, photos on his phone and videos on his phone, but no one's documented these things because the industry of through hiking, I guess it's developing, but it's not big. And so it's cool that, so one, to, yeah, to refer to what you were just saying, the cool thing is, yes, he's done all these things, but he's a young guy and he has no plans on stopping. I think he's actually, to me, starting to get on a roll and really kind of finding his fitness. He's crossing over with a lot of longer distance running type things that I think is really kind of making him dangerous in terms of these like JMT type FKTs that are a little bit shorter compared to what he used to do. But yeah, I think it's, I don't want to say it's just the start, but I think he's got a long way to go. And I was telling him, that's why it was hard for this film to take so long to come out. Cause for me, this has always been in my eyes, like an introductory to Jeff, to a broader audience. We hope a lot of people get to see this thing. And from there, he just needs to keep going. You know, he needs to be in front of the camera more because the stuff he's doing is incredible.
Yeah, Dylan, you could follow the George Lucas model with Star Wars. You start out with, you know, the three things that he's doing currently. Then you can go back early on and do some recreations of three things that were just, you know, incredible that he's done in the past. And then you can continue on into the future with other epic things he's got on his horizon. And this could be a whole set.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to be collaborating at least once a month. These ideas are great.
Yeah. Nice. Now, Dylan, I know when I introduced you, I said you were a film producer and a freelance storyteller. You've also got some other types of outdoor adventure experiences under your belt. If I understand correctly, you are also a thru-hiker and also a bikepacker.
Yeah. Yeah, in many ways, I mean, I found the trails and adventure before I found the camera, I guess. So, yeah, I started off with a little bit of, and so that led me to wanting to go explore, go on road trips, hike around, and didn't take long till I started dreaming bigger. And yeah, I've done some through hikes, biked across the country. Yeah, man. A lot of backpacking in it and all that kind of stuff.
We'll get into some of those adventures a little bit later, but I brought that up just to ask you if you have picked up a trail name along the way, or is it just strictly Dylan? Do you have a trail name? What is it?
The trail name is Lucky.
Lucky. I love it. And yeah. is there a fantastic story to go with that trail name?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's fantastic or not, but I think it fits. So it was on my first through hike. I was in summer break during college. So I went to do the PCT and my goal was to hike as many days as I could over that summer break. And so I gave myself 60 days and that would give me time to travel there, start, finish, and get back home to continue school. And so it being my first through hike, I had no idea what I was doing. I started the trail with a black diamond haul bag for climbing, like multi-pitch climbing, because I thought it looked cool. I had no idea what I was doing. You know, I had big old waterproof boots. Looking back, you know, it's obvious rookie mistake there. Don't want those in the desert. And that kind of, you know, that was sort of kind of what, I don't know, what just kept, I was learning everything the hard way. Right. You know, I just wasn't prepared. I hadn't looked into too much. I had just enough knowledge to start and I learned everything out on the trail. And so, when I got my trail name, it was just another example of that. I didn't know, and I feel so bad about this, but you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't know you needed a permit to hike the Pacific Crest Trail. And so I just showed up and started walking it. And San Jacinto Mountain, we were going up San Jacinto northbound, and we had collected a little group there in Idlewild. And so we were hiking out with a group of like, maybe 8 or 12 people, and probably like 2 or 3 miles up the hillside, we got stopped by a ranger. Was super nice and wanted to see all our permits. And that was the first time I had ever heard about a permit being needed. And what I did was I had made friends. I hiked for 1,000 miles with this German guy. He's like 6'5", really cool dude named GQ. And I stood behind GQ, and I will say I wasn't ready to put up a fight by any means, but I was willing to place myself in a spot where at least maybe I wouldn't be the center of attention. And to my surprise, he looked at everybody's permits, but he didn't ask for mine and didn't really notice me standing there behind GQ. And so we walked up and everyone just kept saying it like, "Oh, you're so lucky. You're so lucky. Like, you would have had to go back down. It would have taken all these days to get your permit." And it was kind of a haphazard name in the beginning. And then there were things that just kept happening where they were like, "You know, that's your trail name, dude. That's just what it is." So that's how I got it.
That is awesome. I didn't know when I asked that question that it would lead to a story of standing behind a 6'5" German guy named GQ. That's awesome.
Yeah. Great guy. Still talk to him. And I appreciate his height.
Well, now I ask about the trail name because we typically go by trail names here on the podcast. So I'll be referring to you as Lucky in a lot of places during the episode, and you can call me Doc.
Doc. Wonderful.
Okay. And now, Lucky, have you had a chance to listen to the podcast before?
I haven't, but I'm excited to tune in. I mean, I can already tell, having conversation. I mean, yeah, you're a smooth talker, dude. It's enjoyable to talk to you already.
Thank you. I only ask because I want to make sure that you are aware of a segment that we have towards the end of the episode called the Pro Tip Insight of the Week. And that's where I will turn to you, Lucky, and ask you to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better. So don't be surprised.
Okay.
Now, of course, you are expected to drop trail wisdom throughout the episode, but don't use it all up because you'll be on the hook for that one at the end.
All right. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
The Must Bring Gear Review.
All right, Lucky. Another feature we've been doing this season is the Must Bring Gear Review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company Six Moon Designs. And here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day adventure, you could take that any direction you want. It could be a bike pack. It could be a through hike. What is the one specific piece of gear you'd insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So Lucky, what is your must bring piece of gear out there?
Wow, that is a good question. Because yeah, there are some essentials, definitely. There are some essentials. Man, my first thought wants to take me to headphones. I'm not going to lie. Because headphones have, you know, when you're out on the trail, you're going through emotions. You have your ups and downs, your peaks and valleys. And, you know, stuff like what you're doing, podcasts, music, they have the ability to kind of, you know, make you think differently out there sometimes and kind of influence the way you're thinking out there. And usually that's the biggest battle, right? I mean, there's a lot of essentials to being in the backcountry, right? There's a lot of things that are, you know, involve safety and are things that you would want. But, you know, I mean, and if I was to get like a legitimate piece of gear, it'd probably be shoes. You know, so I would go headphones because it's just a really good tool to kind of help keep control of your head, or at least for me personally. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to abuse it, but also footwear. I mean, you know, being confident in your footwear, that's, you know, in terms of gear, that's probably the biggest thing. And I would say my advice on footwear is don't believe the hype because everybody's foot is different, you know? And so there's a bunch of different shoe shapes. You know, you got your zero drop, you got your raised heel, you got all these different styles. Everybody's foot's different. So you can't just go with, you know, whatever you see on the commercial or whatever you see the guy on YouTube talking about these shoes. You got to go in, I mean, maybe go in with a few ideas, but try them on and test them out. That's what I would say. Shoes and socks are going to be a big one. If your feet are happy, you know, you're going to smile a lot more out there. And honestly, it can make or break a through hike.
That is such a true statement. That's phenomenal. And I like the headphone piece too, because again, keeping your mind in the right space is going to be helpful for your hike. And of course, you don't want to be just blaring music out there and you follow Leave No Trace. You don't want to noise pollute and intrude on other people's hikes. So headphones could be very, very important.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. No, I feel good about those recommendations.
Those are solid. Those are both solid. Thanks. We got two for one. That's even better. So
heck nice. Yeah.
Good work.
It's the hiking pole.
All right. On to the hiking pole. And that's pole spelled P-O-L-L. Like a survey, not like the kind you hold in your hand. I always like to point that out to show how clever I am.
Well done.
Yeah, thank
nice
you.
Nice one, Doc.
Thank you. Thanks, Lucky. Now, I have two sets of questions. And usually, if I'm talking to an experienced hiker, I'll go with set A questions. And these are seven questions related to hiking, which you have not seen ahead of time. You have no idea what these are. But seven questions on hiking that will help me give you a score between 1 and 100 on the sanity scale, with 1 being completely insane and 100 being completely sane. I also have
one is sane, 100 is insane. Got it.
No, other way around.
Oh God! I knew I was repeating it for a reason. Okay, perfect. So 1 is completely insane, 100 is sane.
That's right.
Excellent.
Yep. And now I have a second set of questions, set B, which don't deal with hiking. If I have a guest on who's been on before, we've already done the hiking questions. This is a different set of questions we can do. Or if I'm talking to somebody who maybe isn't a hiker and we're talking to them about some other aspect of outdoor adventure, you know, we can use these set of questions. And these questions are dealing with the big issues facing society today. You could probably spend an entire podcast on just one of the questions. I say that, you know, half in jest. These are kind of funny questions, but to kind of get a sense of which side of the fence you fall on, and with an explanation. So you do have a hiking background, so I'm inclined to go with the hiking questions if that's okay with you, or would you rather pull from the other set?
Yeah, no, I think the hiking questions would be cool, but okay. I'm down for whatever.
All right. You want to hear what you missed out on? I'll give you a sample from set B.
Yeah.
Okay. Set B, a question might be in set B, Netflix or YouTube. So you don't have to answer that. We'll save that for your next interview on the podcast, but that just kind of gives you a sense of where these other questions might go. All right.
Okay.
So 7 questions, hiking related. Before I ask the first one, what do you think, what score would Garmer give you?
That is a good question. I can be a wild card sometimes, not as much as Jeff, but, and you know, right in the middle is just doesn't sit well with me. You know, I think I was just talking about this earlier, you know, everybody always comments on how chill they think I am, but internally it feels like a different picture. So people who are a little bit closer to me, I think they recognize that, you know, I'm a little bit more insane than meets the eye. So I would, you know, guess I would go 25, right?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Might be aggressive.
I like the fact that you said you don't like being in the middle. I mean, you're not a fence sitter. You're going to be on one side or the other.
No. Yeah. I mean, that's boring, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even 25 is, it's such a simple fraction. I don't know, but anyways, I'll get better.
Okay. And I have to let you know that each time that Garmeyer's been on, his score has gotten progressively lower. So I think that goes in line with what you were saying there. I mean, if you just know somebody as a casual acquaintance, that kind of colors your impression of them. But the more you get to know somebody, you really see, you know, where the train's off the tracks a little bit.
Exactly. And, you know, the beautiful thing is a lot of those times you see those things and you can relate to them. And so, it's not a negative, I would say.
Okay, here we go. So these questions will refer to hiking, specifically through hiking. And it's always best if you give your answer and then a bit of the explanation as to why you went that way.
Got it.
Okay. First question, fairly easy, I think. Trekking poles or no trekking poles?
So sorry, I'm picking one, or I'm because I sorry, I got confused with the one in the hundred.
Yes. Yeah, you're not giving any numerical ratings. You're actually gonna I'm gonna ask you for example on this one, when you're out there, do you use trekking poles or do you not use trekking poles and why? I will give you the score later based on my opinion of your answer.
I'm sorry. Got it. Sorry, Doc. I'm back. I'm good.
Okay. I know you just got to that high altitude a few hours ago, so it's understandable.
Yeah. And just, I mean, this is pretty public, but I've got very bad ADD. And so I mix things up quite often, but I ask questions to try and battle it. So anyways.
Perfect.
All right. We're good.
Okay.
So, sorry, question again.
Trekking poles or no trekking poles?
I'm going no trekking poles. I started with trekking poles in the beginning, and then I realized that I just kept losing them. I always have a camera on me and usually like multiple lenses and stuff like that. And I usually keep my camera on a strap or like a Peak, you know, I use like Peak Design stuff and keep it on me. And so whenever I'd see a shot or something I'd want to shoot, or hikers coming up and I want to run and kind of, you know, see a shot, I would always end up setting my trekking poles down, go get the shot. And then I'd start walking away. And 3 minutes later, I remember I had trekking poles, I have to walk back. And so, yeah, I would say no trekking poles for me.
Too many extra miles involved having to walk back and get them.
Yeah.
All right. Question number two, what's on your feet, boots or trail runners?
Trail runners always. Yeah. I am having a hard time finding reasons to wear boots. I think I did a backpacking trip last summer in Alaska and I think that was the right fit. It was off trail and we were walking through a lot of like talus, loose stuff that'll kind of bite your ankles. And also we were wearing pants. So, but I would always kind of prefer something, you know, something lighter that'll dry out quicker. Even in wet conditions, it seems to be a better option for me. And then I'll usually just like overcompensate with socks, like extra socks or something like that. But that's just me.
Got it. Now, Lucky, I neglected to let you know that right off the bat, anybody who's been involved in some kind of long distance excursion like the PCT or riding a bike across America, that's an automatic 25-point deduction. So there's no way you can get to 100.
I hope. Okay, perfect.
Okay.
That's right. Good. I'm used to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
What's a passing grade?
Well, you know, I'm in education, so it's typically the, you know, the 90, 80, 70, 60 scale.
Yeah.
But, you know, that all goes out.
We'll see where I land.
Yeah. All right. Question number three, when it comes to shelter out there in the backcountry, you prefer a tent, tarp, hammock, bivy, or, hey, let's just cowboy camp.
For me, it's going to be cowboy camp. I live in the Southwest. I think it suits the weather a bit better in the Southwest to kind of get used to cowboy camping. But, you know, it really comes down to the fact that I don't really like breaking down tents in the morning, if we're to be totally honest. And there's something about just laying there. It's like when you finally get comfortable and you lay back and there's just nothing in between you but you and in the sky and the stars. And there's something about that. I don't know what it is. And also, you know, to get to the, I remember when I kind of got to the point where I felt comfortable with cowboy camping, it felt like a big step. It felt like I was really kind of finding comfort in the outdoors, you know, and feeling almost like I belong there, you know, like I'm not just this outsider who's going to get messed with all the time. So there's just some feeling about it, you know.
Three things I want to say about that answer right there. Number one is we're looking for completely frank, unflinching honesty in this podcast. You're doing a great job so far.
Excellent.
Second is imposter syndrome. You think there's, this is unrelated to the hiking pole. It's just an offshoot of a follow-up question here. You think there's a degree of imposter syndrome out there on the trail where you feel like you don't quite belong, that you're too new to it. You wonder what others think of you and you're just trying to fit in, fake it till you make it.
Yeah. I mean, to some extent, I've always kind of felt that way, and I sort of feel it more off the trail than I do on the trail. I remember people would ask me, like when I did my first hike on the PCT, you know, in my head, I thought I'd go out there and fix a lot of issues, like things would be solved. That wasn't really the case. I still dealt with the same things after as I did before, but the biggest takeaway and the answer that I kind of got that I wasn't expecting was just that, you know, there's people from all different backgrounds out here. You can kind of be who you are. We're all equal out on the trail. And so it was in the beginning, I definitely had that. But at the same time, like I told you in the beginning of the podcast, you know, I had all the wrong gear. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have the permit. And those kind of things, people loved that. Like it was sort of what made you unique, you know, and it wasn't something to hide from. Whereas, you know, maybe in normal life, you kind of hide from your inadequacies, right? But on the trail, they kind of make you unique and you learn to appreciate that about yourself.
Nice. And the third thing I want to mention was that when you become comfortable cowboy camping, that's when you know you've made it. I mean, that's you've established yourself. So well done.
Yeah.
Question number four, when you are out there cowboy camping, what's your sleep system? Is it a sleeping bag or a quilt?
It was a sleeping bag until I discovered the quilt. And once again, I don't know. I mean, I want to say it's a Southwest thing, but really, you know, this is where I'm from. This is where I've done most of my miles, you know, on the Arizona Trail, Colorado Trail, in these places. And there's something about being able to have one bag that, you know, you can wrap up a lot of these quilts, you can button up and kind of get wrapped up in them if you're cold. But also when it's like a little bit better temperature out, you can kind of lay it out like a blanket. And for me, the fact that I can sort of roll around and all that kind of stuff and feel a bit more freedom, I just sleep so much more comfortably with kind of it splayed out like that. So I like the versatility. And also, yeah, I'm a big fan of the liner as well. So I'll always carry a liner. I don't care that it would be, yeah, I'm not big into like the weight saving thing or whatever. I love the way a liner feels with laying in a quilt. So that's kind of my go-to.
Okay. Question number five, when it comes to food out there, stove, cold soak, or stoveless?
Oh, wow. I've never actually thought about which one I preferred more, but I've done a lot of stoveless. I really like the simplicity of that. And then I just convince myself that I'm going to like get so stoked and eat so good when I'm in towns, you know, and that's just kind of, you know, I don't mind the soaking thing, but I would say lucky nowadays, you know, if I was thinking future lucky, always bring a stove, I think. 'Cause nowadays I just don't, you know, I don't care about the saving. I'll bring whatever, you know, I'm so much better at slowing down these days. And, so for me, it's fun to kind of appreciate cooking a meal. So I think I'd go stove these days.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Now, Lucky, is this is question number six. Is life better above or below the tree line?
Wow. These are cool questions. And I guess it, you know, I don't want to say it depends, but you know, it does a little bit.
That's a 50% right there. You can't hang it in the middle saying it depends.
So for me, my favorite moments for ever since I picked up a camera is when you're up high and the sky is just going crazy, and it's just a moment, and you're just and I'm just trying to run around and capture it the best I can, and I know that the moment's fleeting, and that always happens above tree line. When you're in the trees, feels a bit more confined, and something about being up high, you know, feels like you can breathe better, and you get to experience those big epic mountain views, you know. So I think above tree line.
Okay. Question number 7, last question in the poll. What's more important, pack weight or luxury items?
Yeah, I guess I would say luxury items, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like a, and I mean,
like a liner.
For me, like a liner. Yeah. And for me, I've never not done a through hike with camera gear. And so I usually bring an extra like 8 to 10 pounds anyways, because I bring multiple lenses, camera, tripod. And so I've already kind of had to accept all those things. But what's interesting is that all that extra stuff in my pack usually forces me to eliminate some other luxury items because I can't fit them, or, you know, it just doesn't make the structure of the pack work great. So, but yeah, I think luxury items is, because if I didn't have my camera, I'd probably bring other stuff. You know what I mean?
I think if I were carrying 10 pounds of camera and camera equipment, that I would strive to be as ultralight as possible. That means my base weight besides the camera gear would be like 6 pounds.
Yeah, it's a fine line, man. I'll tell you that right now, because if you go too ultralight, which I've done before, then the pack's not going to support the extra weight very well, right? And so, yeah, I think there's a good middle ground, but I think people who carry cameras on trails are constantly looking for the best solution to pack it. And honestly, I think there's a huge opportunity out there still. I mean, there's a couple good packs, but realistically, there are not enough. And I think a lot of more people are carrying cameras these days. I think there's a big opportunity out there. So,
all right. Hey, Lucky, let me take your answers and filter them through the JFM pod algorithm. We have to do some math here. I carry the 3. We're going to divide that by √2, and I'm going to multiply that by pi. We're going to adjust for the altitude in Denver right now to take that into account. And I come out with a score of 38.
Okay.
38. That's kind of an interesting number. Is it prime? No, it's not prime. It's even, but it's still an interesting number, 38.
Yeah, I know. It feels good. It's, it's in between 50 and 25. So, mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't far off.
I'm sure if we had more time together, if I had some more background on you, we might adjust that score downward, but you know, that's what it is.
It's good for now. You're exactly right. Cause yeah. Okay.
All right. It has the chance to go down or go up depending on the rest of our conversation tonight.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. All right. Good and to know.
Speaking of which, let's, before we get too far down the trail, let's back up a little bit. I want to hear about your background, where you grew up, what kinds of sports and hobbies you played as a kid, and how did you get involved in the outdoor adventure cult?
Yeah. So I grew up in Florida. When I was 10, we moved over to Phoenix, Arizona. Whole life I played soccer, and in Florida it was just for fun. I moved over to Phoenix and it got real competitive real quick. And that was pretty much my life until I was like 20 years old. Was a terrible student. Had a lot of friends, had a good heart. Just felt like I was in some form of prison in school for whatever reason. I just couldn't sit still. But also found certain topics I was interested in. So I decided to go to college later. And I moved to Colorado Springs. Let's see. So while I was in Arizona, I got a dog when I was 19. This is the introduction to the outdoors. I did a couple soccer tryouts for some small professional teams. in the USL League, and those were just falling flat. And so that was a big turning point for me. I needed to I had put everything into that, and I didn't have any interests or even any inklings of what I might want to do and what I might enjoy doing with the rest of my life. And it didn't feel like it was going to be, you know, in a cubicle. So it was a stressful time in my life for sure. And getting a dog, I always refer to because my dog's name is Sammy. And Sammy pushed me to go, you know, I couldn't let her down. She was active. I had to get her out. She's part greyhound. So we would go on these road trips, and the road trips just started to get further away and more epic and longer hikes. And so that was really what started it. And I had decided, I was like, man, it would be really cool if I took pictures while I was out there, just on my trips, just so I could remember. And one of my friends, her name's Sammy as well, actually, Sammy Weber, she got a camera for Christmas, and she told me that she wasn't gonna use it while she's in college and I could have it. So she let me borrow it indefinitely. And so I just started going on these trips, taking pictures, and you know, on that front, the rest is history. It's just been something that I've constantly been drawn to. And eventually I wanted to go to Colorado. I wanted something new, and I wanted to chase the mountains. And I got over there, enrolled in community college there, and was going to school for journalism. At this point, I still didn't think I could make photography a job, but I just knew it was something I wanted to do for forever. So I was really into writing. I liked writing a lot, and started going to school for journalism. And after the first semester, discovered photojournalism, watched a couple documentaries of these like outdoor athletes documenting these like crazy adventures and telling really beautiful stories that I loved watching. And yeah, that's just kind of what it just snowballed from there. I think I took 4 photography classes while I was in college, met a few friends, and just started making connections that way. And then I just started, you know, I was making no money in the beginning. All the stuff I was shooting was only what I wanted to shoot. And that usually ended up being through hikes. And, you know, I was sharing photos with some backpacking companies here and there, but yeah, it was tough in the beginning for sure. But for whatever reason, I guess I just knew I was going to kind of stick with it. And the consistency over time just kind of started paying off, and making good connections. And yeah, that's what kind of led me to now. I don't know. Does it feel like I'm missing something from there?
No, in fact, I just need to comment that of all of the outdoor adventure origin stories I've heard on this podcast, feeling a pressure, not wanting to let your dog down, and her pushing you to get out there, that is one of the best origin stories that I've heard. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, it really, you know, what I kind of explain to people sometimes is that I think I was sort of fortunate that school didn't work out for me in particular. At least that's the way I look at it, is because I didn't have an outlet to go to, right? Like when I was 18, 19, all my friends were going to these big schools to play soccer. They all had scholarships or academic scholarships. And I wasn't even going to school. I was working 2 jobs, and I found myself just desperate for something to care about. And I hadn't realized it until soccer was gone that that's all I put my energy into. And so I think I was just desperate to find something to wake up for, you know, and to pursue. And photography was just that first thing that came by that I was just so interested in. And it's never been this like in the beginning. I mean, there was many years till I ever even thought I could make a career out of it. I was truly just doing it, because I loved it. And So it's been, I feel really lucky to kind of have learned those lessons earlier on. I know some people go to school and they kind of figure, you know, sometimes those things have to come a little bit later after they go out into the real world and discover different jobs and stuff. So, yeah. And I learned a lot about the world out on the trail. So, I definitely learned that the world is a good place and that people are really good and have great intentions. And so it sort of changed my perspective on life, you know, and also out there, what's so beautiful about through hiking. I mean, even when I biked across the country, that was so special. You meet people who are in, who are having these dramatic changes in their life. You know, they're usually at, they've usually faced some crux of their life and they're making radical change to kind of find solutions. And that's what you find out on the trail. You find people who, you know, they're doing something for themselves, and that's so special and powerful. And as a 19-year-old, 20-year-old, you know, walking around with, I mean, my buddy GQ, I was telling you about, he just got his PhD, a mathematician in Germany, and needed an adventure. And we became best friends out there. So it's just cool what it introduces you to. And yeah.
Hey, Dylan, yeah. That trail name you picked up?
Yeah.
Very appropriate. I think it kind of resonates throughout a lot of these things that you're talking about. So you got stuck with the right moniker. So good work there. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into some stories of adventure, and also we're going to talk about some of your films. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. Six Moon Designs has been innovating ultralight backpacking gear for the past 20 years. With a wide range of products ranging from ultralight shelters to backpacks and accessories like their extensive line of trekking umbrellas, Six Moon Designs is sure to have a great piece of gear for your needs. With the company philosophy being that gear should aid one's experience, not define it, Six Moon Designs thinks the more time people spend outside the natural world, the better off this world will be. And remember, go wild, live young. This episode is sponsored by Jolly Gear. Are you tired of compromising between the ventilation of a button-down and the full protection of a sun hoodie? With the Triple Crown button-down, you can have the best of both. Plus, their fun standout patterns will have you the talk of the trail. Visit them at jollygear.com. Through hiker owned, Jolly Gear, where fun meets functional.
And welcome back. We are talking to Dylan Harris, aka Lucky, and just heard some great stories about his growing up and finding himself. And I love the turn of phrase you use. You're desperate to care about something. I mean, that just, if that doesn't grab you and suck you in to, you know, what we're going to hear next, I don't know what will. Now I know you've had a number of adventures out there. You did 60 days on the PCT, where you went from Campo to Lake Tahoe. You've done the Arizona Trail a couple times. You've done the Sierra High Route, which is a little more unfamiliar, uncommon route for a lot of folks in the Sierras. And then you've also done some bike touring. So, you know, with those in mind, I'm going to let you, the expert, decide what you want to share. What is the most interesting? What, you know, we're looking for type 2 fun. We're looking for, entertaining stuff. What do you want to pull from there?
Some good stories, huh?
Yeah.
You know, let's see. I mean, so they always say your first is, you know, you'll never forget. You always think so fondly of that. So the PCT.
Are they talking about hiking? Are they talking about hiking with them?
You know, I think it's applicable to a lot of things. I'm not really sure, you know, so there's just endless stories from that because I was just constantly, every day was like, I was learning something new. And yeah, the way we went off, I finished at South Lake Tahoe, and that was pretty cool because we were, you know, we all celebrated by going to the casinos, crossing the border over to the casinos, and, GQ was, GQ, the German guy, he was gambling, like playing card games. And so we were just getting free drinks while he was gambling. And it was just such a blast. We were just running around having so much fun. But you know, I think, I mean, the Sierra High Route, I guess I'd be interested to talk about that because I know it's a little bit, lesser known to the common public, but it's,
Now, folks, a lot of our listeners have heard about the JMT, the John Muir Trail. We talk about that occasionally. Yeah. Of course, this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. So what do you expect? Yeah, it's 211 miles between Yosemite and Mount Whitney, a great trail through the Sierras that kind of goes north-south. We've got the High Sierra Trail, which goes west-east or east-west, however you want to look at it. It's 71 miles, goes from Crescent Meadow to the top of Whitney as well. But the Sierra High Route, that's a little bit different. Describe that for us.
Yeah. So the way I always describe the Sierra High Route is it parallels the John Muir Trail. You know, maybe this isn't accurate to all, but what I always say is the John Muir Trail goes, valley to pass. And that's kind of how the trail sort of takes you. The Sierra High Route is off trail route. So I think you use somewhere in the range of like 15 to 20% of the JMT and then other little trails to get to your resupplies and also to connect to the off trail, but it stays very much pass to peak. So you're staying higher, for longer, and you're also doing you're doing route finding essentially. So you've got, you can either use GPX files or a GPS device, or you can use paper printouts. And I did that with one of my buddies who I did the Colorado Trail with. We went and tackled this. And what's really cool is he is super into paper maps. And I don't want to say I was thinking smarter, but I like to take the easy way, I guess. And so I've got the GPS. And so I would always graciously, I would say, I'd love if he was here to laugh at this, but I would graciously give him his time up on each pass or high point to kind of look at his maps and see where we should go and kind of point to where we need to go using his compass and maps and everything when I have it on my GPS right there. But still, even with the GPS, it's more of a suggestion of where you should go. You still need to find what's the best route, because you can easily cliff yourself out or end up in just going a bad direction, right? But yeah, it's roughly, I think they say it's like anywhere from 190 miles to like 220, 230 miles. And that's because it's a route. So you're not taking the same, you know, there's not a pathway that you're taking the same distance every time. There's multiple ways to go. And it was the most difficult thing I've ever done, by far. I think it took us 17 days and I had lost so much weight on that trail. I mean, it's just up and down. You're doing a lot. And sometimes you have to cross, you have to hop on boulders the size of cars for half a mile to get to the next like flat meadow where you can, you know, traverse over to something else. It's sort of pick your own poison, and that what's so cool about it is so engaging, you know, and to have that experience with somebody else, to be so engaged in how it really connects you with the landscape, right? You're not just head down, feet are moving, staying within the lines, right? You're being creative out there, and you're kind of choosing your adventure, and your personality shows. My buddy always liked to choose the high line. I love to go down and then up, and he loved to stay high, and he would do anything in his power to do that.
I can empathize and actually, with that. I can empathize with that. Always try and maintain the high ground. Any step you give up going down, you got to climb that back up again. So I understand what he's talking about there.
I know it was a hard sell, that, but we're good friends, so we were forgiving to each other. And yeah. Actually, there's a couple good. So, okay, so one was it was his birthday, and we had hitchhiked into Mammoth. So we go into Mammoth. And it was his birthday, and we were in a brewery grabbing a beer, and we saw on the wall a poster for the local community college in Mammoth was having a John Muir reenactment. And so there's this guy who used to be an actor in Hollywood who has committed his life to doing these John Muir reenactments. And he was presenting one that night. And so I bought me and Austin, Austin and I, sorry, I bought Austin and I tickets to that. And he was so excited. And I'll just never forget that night because we came in there, no shower, just ragged. I mean, we were torn to shreds by this route. And we come in there smelling so bad. And we're with a bunch of old fancy dressed people. Everyone smells nice, like cologne. And when you're on the trail, you can always, your smell, you can always smell when people smell good, right? And we're sitting in there and we're watching this, just learning all about John Muir and like his vision for the area and and all this stuff. And it was like the coolest thing to live to almost learn about that in that kind of way while on that route.
They so probably that was thought really you, cool. They probably thought that the two of you were plants, that you were part of the show. But, here's this guy reenacting, and he's brought in a couple of haggard thru hikers to kind of add to the atmosphere.
Absolutely. Yeah. They probably thought we were going to get up there, but, but it's probably for the best. Cause at that point, I don't think our social, interactions would have been spot on at that point. we were kind of lost in that route, I think, but, no, but the crazy story and the most memorable one for so Austin is actually in, I brought Austin out to help with Free Outside film. He hiked the Colorado Trail twice, and he was kind of our logistics guy for Jeff's film that we just were premiering tomorrow. Austin and I were on the final push to the end of this route, which I always forget what it's called. It's called like Twin Lakes or Mono Lake. I think it's Mono Lake actually. Or no, it's Twin Lakes. Anyways, we lost each other. So we went two different ways up a pass, and I think we just got too comfortable. And we had 2.5 days till we were projected to get to the end. And basically what happened, this was my fault, but we got to the top of, not the top of this pass, but the top of this climb that flattened out onto like an alpine lake and then went up another pass. At the top of that first climb, I was up there waiting for him for like 20, 30 minutes, yelling his name. He didn't see me, so he went down. And when I didn't see him, I just figured he kept going. And so I went up to the very top of the pass, and he went down and just stayed there and waited for me. And I was all confused. I had thought he'd gone up and over the pass and then back down the other side. And so we ended up losing each other. I'll never forget that night because I was camped by a lake down the pass I had came down, and I was just camped right there. And the whole time I'm making my meal, just staring up at the pass, like hoping to see his light. But it never came. And he ended up the next day walking. He wasn't super passionate about finishing anything, and I think he had somewhere to go. He ended up making his way over to Yosemite and ended up in a Japanese fashion photo shoot. That was published in a magazine later, which was just too hilarious. And I finished by myself, and we didn't talk. So when we had lost each other, we didn't talk till 5 days later. So that was because I just didn't have service. And then yeah, hitchhiked all the way back to LA, where I caught the bus from a guy coming back from his sixth Burning Man. So, you know, it's just, the trail is a crazy place, you know.
That is a crazy story. Were you worried that maybe something happened to him, or was he worried that something happened to you, or are you guys confident that you just got separated and that's the way it was?
No. Yeah, Doc, it was terrible, to be honest. It was obviously those are things you speak of and you laugh about later. But no, it was, I mean, the next 2 days of me finishing the trail by myself, it was miserable, to be honest. But I knew there was nothing I could, you know, because we weren't on a trail per se. And I was very confident in him. I knew we had days of food. But it was tough. And I think I almost remember feeling like maybe the best thing I could do is go to the end, because they had there was a lake with a bunch of infrastructure there, not good cell service, but they had Wi-Fi. And I figured if I didn't see him there, so I always thought I was going to see him at the end. I still believe that. And when I didn't, it was really concerning. I reached out to his family and they had heard from him. So that, you know, figured that out. But I'd always figured, you know, at least I could tell people and we could go back and search for him if there was anything wrong that had happened. But I think he also had a spot device on him as well. Sorry, I don't remember all the details on that.
That's okay. Your impressions and the way you were feeling, that's the important stuff. That's a crazy story. Now, I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about your bike tour across America. We're currently, this is season five of the podcast. To kick off season five, we talked to Rob Pope. I'm sorry, we ended season four. We ended season four, episode 50, talking to Rob Pope. He's the one who wrote the book Becoming Forrest, and he recreated the Forrest Gump run. He ran across the U.S. Oh, wow. Five times. And
I think I've heard of him.
Yeah, he is amazing and was a lot of fun to talk to. And I encourage anybody and everybody to grab a copy of that book and read it, because one of the things I learned from him is, you know, if you want to learn about a country, run across it. And meet folks from all different areas, all different walks of life. He didn't do the same route five times. He tried to recreate what Forrest did in the movie, and it was actually five different kind of routes across the U.S. And you know, if you fly over a country, you don't get to know anything about it except maybe, you know, what it looks like from 30,000 feet. You drive across it, you learn a little bit more, but I imagine biking across it or running across it, you're gonna learn a whole lot more. Was that your experience? Did you pick up a lot of things you didn't expect to find on this tour?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I haven't spent much time on the East Coast and in the middle of the country at all. I haven't spent any time, and so it was all new to me. You know, I wasn't going all the way across the country. I needed to, we were doing a fundraiser thing. And so we needed to end in Colorado. So for me to extend it a bit more, what I wanted to do was start in New York and then bike down the East Coast to Virginia. And then from Virginia, take this thing called the Transamerica mm-hmm. route. Across to, it goes right through Colorado. And so that's what I took to Colorado. And, yeah, I mean, you nailed it basically. That was my biggest takeaway. And honestly, just like I was explaining on the PCT before, is I always thought it was me going out into the outdoors and kind of being by myself and discovering these things about me, you know, and like working through some things. But it's always been, every adventure I've gone on, it's always been the people you meet. And so what's so cool about riding a bike on roads or running on roads over long distances is you get to see the people and places where they exist, you know? When you're out on the trail, yeah, you go into towns and you meet people there. And then you meet people while you're on the trail, other people doing what you're doing. But what's really cool is you get to see people who are just sort of living their everyday life that you kind of just stumble upon. And so it's really cool. And you know, what I kind of recall about the bike ride across the country so much was just sort of, yeah, the way it would stop people, right? From doing, you know, we're always moving so fast. And sometimes I'd show up to a restaurant on my bike with all my gear on it. And there would always be some couple or somebody who would just stop what they're doing. They'd come over and they'd just ask one question. And then that one question would turn into a 2.5 hour conversation. And then that would turn into me sleeping on their farm or something like that, you know, sleeping on the grass in their farm or something. And it would just stop people in their tracks and have them just sort of living in a moment, you know. And I got to be, you know, not only did I get to kind of, I maybe facilitate that on my adventure, but also it made my adventure so much better too, because then I got to learn about, you know, the Amish in Pennsylvania, and I got to, you know, learn about the busy roads near Baltimore and all this kind of stuff. And then see the churches in the South in Virginia and Kentucky was crazy. And, you know, all these churches were open door policy. They'd feed us. I mean, I'll never forget, you know, I don't want to cross too many. I mean, I just met you, Doc, but there was this, a very free moment for me was, I was coming down the Blue Ridge Mountains, and I decided for whatever reason, I wanted to bike down these mountains naked. And, so I did that and I just added that part I could have left out if I wanted to, but I couldn't help it. Later that night, we were planning to stay at a church, which I know is, you know, but I don't think I did anything wrong deep down. I think I was just having a little bit of fun, but anyways, we stay at this church, and, you know, it's totally in the backwoods. There's nothing around, big open fields. And we hadn't even realized they had a kitchen. You know, they welcomed it to bikers on the Trans-Am trail. And, we fell asleep like where they have, sorry, I don't know all the terminology in the church, but you know, where everything happens there on like the altar, I guess.
Yes.
And we wake up to all these people coming in the church, and the next morning was Sunday morning, and we hadn't even realized. I mean, this church was in the absolute middle of nowhere. There was nothing around. There was like two houses we could see, and we could see for miles. And next thing we know, there's probably like 150 people from everywhere show up to this church. And my buddy, who I had a guy following me in a rental car, Isaiah, one of my best friends, he was filming the thing. And Isaiah, so I had a big breakfast, was talking to all the people showing up to church, and then took off on my bike. Isaiah stayed and spoke during the sermon. He spoke for like 15 minutes to the entire church about what we're doing and who we're raising money for. And they all, I think we got like $300 that day. And it was, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's so cool to, you know, in a world where it seems like we can't really agree on much, it's cool for people to just, you know, these people had nothing to do with our fundraiser. They weren't even thinking about it when they woke up, but they can appreciate your intentions and they're impressed with your ambition, you know? And I think that's what's cool about going across the country on the roads. You know, that's what I took from it, was just you're amongst the people, you know, and you, although you're doing something for yourself, if you're willing to communicate and like open up yourself to other people, you really can. I mean, I think you can really change other people's kind of perception and maybe the direction of their lives too, just with that interaction.
Yeah. Let's face it, Lucky. We're living in a polarized world where people feel a lot of freedom to sit behind their social media and post whatever they whatever they want to post and make generalizations about other people and listen with an idea for how they're going to argue with you instead of listening to understand your perspective. And so anytime you can meet people face to face and have a true understanding of one another, the better off we're going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And I mean, yeah, when you're face to face, like you're saying, it's, I don't know, it's easier to have that connection. And there's far less judgment when you do that.
Yep. Hey, let's shift gears. I want to talk a little bit about your filmmaking abilities and let you know that I sat down and watched Shifting Mindset, a little documentary you put together. I think it's 18, 19 minutes long, and was just thoroughly impressed about how that was put together and the message behind it and the kind of the subject of the film being a bike rider by the name of Taylor. Is it Ladine?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly.
So do you want to spend a little time talking about that? And also I'd love to hear more on, I know we talked about the Free Outside already, but I'm really want to hear about any kind of information about other films that you've done as well.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's cool you checked out the Shifting Mindset film. That film means so much to me. That's been another film that's been in the making for a while. A guy named Taylor Ladine, one of the best endurance mountain bikers to ever do it. He does a lot of like 24-hour racing. He's represented the United States a handful of times. And he's put out a lot of efforts that haven't been matched. And so he's, a polarizing figure. He's somebody that's well-respected, but he's somebody who's also very low-key because he doesn't put himself out there very much. And ever since he was a teenager, he's been dealing with severe mental health issues. And he's never spoken about them outwardly to the public. And luckily, he has his beautiful wife, Mary, who has been there with him this whole time. But those, the trials and tribulations of going through all that kind of stuff has brought up a lot more symptoms that are adding to the severity of all of it. And so he now deals with kind of like a alternating heartbeat, like a heartbeat that skips and then tries to catch up, and then it messes with his blood pressure, which causes him to pass out sometimes while he's exercising like intensely. And so he's had, and on a mountain bike, obviously it's dangerous. He's had a lot of bad crashes that have kind of been bad setbacks, and subsequently have led to him being very inconsistent in his performances. And he is very performance-based. He's a competitive guy, but as humble as they come. But he's, so this whole film, the whole concept was sort of redefining, it's called Shifting Mindset. It's all about him sort of redefining his relationship with what he believes to be a successful day on the bike. It used to be performance-based. Now it still is that. He's still competitive. But it's more about, how he kind of deals with those difficult moments that he, encounters while he's out there. And for him, being a 24-hour, doing these longer races, these endurance-style races, the only way for him to get to those points and to test himself and to push past those points is to do these huge efforts at these, like world-class paces. So that was really cool. That was the film's an absolute honor for me to tell. And it's my first film that is independently produced by myself. So it went out on my own YouTube channel. I've got a couple things floating on my YouTube channel from a while back. But I started out as a photographer, so I only been doing video for 2.5 years. And so, yeah, it feels super good to, you know, it's always been my intention that to go a little bit deeper and to tell, tell intentional stories with deep meaning and stuff that really, can be uncomfortable, but still hits home. And for me, selfishly, it also gives me an excuse to connect with people that I think are incredible in a deeper way. And shifting mindset, although that story, you know, that story could be much longer. It's always been, it's an introduction for someone who really, really needs to, really wants to engage with more community that's like kind of maybe gone through what he's gone through, to get better understanding and yeah, to just build community. So for me, it was an honor to like introduce this side of this, like, you know, prolific athlete, to the world. And he does not have as much recognition as he deserves. And so, yeah, maybe this can be a start towards him being more of an advocate in the sport.
Yeah. It's a great story. It's a great message. It also, it feels in the best way possible. It feels like an extended PSA, about, you know, mental illness and depression and dealing with that and how to deal with that. And so it was just, absolutely fantastic. Really, really enjoyed it. How has it been received out there? Has it, is picked up some popularity?
Yeah. So, so far it's, you know, to be fully transparent, it's not got the views that we, you know, we hope for. We didn't have much backing. This was another experience where, or another project where it was a passion project. And so, you know, the goal, the first and foremost was to make the film. We're going to make the film and we're going to put it out there and we're going to be proud of it. The second step is to get, brands, sponsors he works with, people like that on board with the story, and hopefully they'd help support in pushing it out. And we did have that, you know, it's not like I've got a big team, so we don't have this huge like marketing plan going out. But we spent a few weeks pushing it out, made a trailer, and it's gotten viewed by everyone who I would say is aware of Taylor. Maybe not everybody, but people in his kind of network and people who know what he does. And then also my audience as well, but it hasn't gone past that. And for me, that's really important. I really want, this project to spread a little further than just our circle. So we're working on ways, you know, we've had a bunch of companies share the trailer and everything, but, yeah, we're going to work on ways to get it out there more. So,
okay. Well, here at the podcast, we'll do our part, you know, in the pandemic and post pandemic world, mental health is certainly an issue. You know, I work with adults and kids who are struggling. And so, it's taken a toll. And so I'm going to encourage every one of our listeners who are tuned in right now to take 20 minutes out of their day and look up Shifting Mindset by Dylan Harris. Look it up on YouTube. Spend that 20 minutes watching it and tell a friend about it. Let's get the word out there and get this important message out there to more people. So again, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, Doc. I appreciate that. No, I really do. Yeah, it feels good. My intention is to work on projects that I really believe in and tell stories that really resonate with me. And I hope that, you know, it does the same for other people, but yeah, so it just feels really good for you to, you know, kind of appreciate it in the way you do. So I appreciate that.
All right. Hey, Lucky, what's up? What's up next for you? What's the next big adventure, whether it's a film project or a bikepacking experience or a thru-hiking experience?
Yeah, so I'm really excited. My wife and I are doing a rafting trip with one of my best buddies through the Grand Canyon next week. And it's going to be, I think, 6 days in the Grand Canyon. And I've done this trip once with him before. And he is just a he's the best. I mean, he is a passionate outdoor chef, you know, brings Dutch ovens and all the sorts and just makes things you shouldn't be able to make outside. He's incredible. And just he knows everything about the Canyon because he used to do research in the Canyon. So he used to live in there and tells a bunch of stories. So it's just a good time, and I'm excited for my wife to have that experience. Let's see, bigger picture, big horizon. I mean, films with tomorrow, I've got the premiere. So I'm sure by the time this comes out, that'll already be passed, but we're hoping to premiere the film in a few different other locations here in the Colorado area. So we're thinking like Boulder, maybe Durango. We'll see. Maybe Colorado Springs. And then we're going to be premiering it most likely in Arizona in January. I think in January, we're also might be in Salt Lake City. So there'll be a few opportunities to watch it. It's cool. It's a feature length. It's an hour and 20 minutes. It's a feel good. I had one of my really good friends, insanely talented, and I'm so happy I'm thinking to say this right now. I'd have been pissed if I didn't. His name is Rob Ricardo. You can look him up on Spotify. He did a custom score for the film. So he did all the music for the film. And his music is incredible. And he's big time on Spotify, but you can find him if you search him. And so it's just been kind of, yeah, that's what's the most fun, right? It's just kind of creating things with your friends and pulling it off. And, you know, then I'm here in Denver now, Jeff and I going for a walk down the street and him being like, I can't believe we're here. Like, it's been so, so long in the making. And yeah, so it's just another reason to remember, you know, why was I stressing so much? Why am I freaking out? You know, you got to enjoy the process, right? And yeah, so.
Absolutely. Is he wearing his tiger hoodie or his tiger shorts?
He's dressed pretty normal this trip so far. Oh no, actually he got a new jacket. He got a new jacket and, you know, I'm sure he's going to wear it a bunch, but he got it at a thrift store in Tahoe, and it is classic Jeff fashion. It is next level. So
nice.
Yeah. He isn't slowing down on that front.
Fantastic. Now I look forward to when your film reaches LA, the LA area, or some online medium where I can take a look. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, Doc, let me know if you can think of any, you know, the guy who put the film together, our editor, Jason Fitzpatrick,
been on the podcast.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, if you guys have any good recommendations to do it there, that would be incredible. Yeah, if there's any good venues or, I mean, it would be incredible to show it there. So we hope to show it for, you know, over the next like 6 months, probably.
Fantastic. All right. Hey, Lucky, you know where we are?
Where are we?
The pro tip insight of the week.
That's right, Half Calf. Oh, it's yeah. That time of the episode where Lucky gets to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better. What do you have for us, Lucky?
Gosh, I just want to give something so good. Pressure's especially on. It's right at the end here. Trail tip. You know, sometimes it's hard to convince yourself you're in a position to give tips at all. But I would say, yeah, this is what I would say. I would say, you know, I think we spend a lot of time, emphasizing kind of the act of conquering things, doing things in order to conquer them, long trails in order to, you know, kind of check that off the list. And you know, it's like when I look back to my first through hike and I just had 60 days to see how far I could go and how much fun I could have. And then I think about what I've done since then, where I've gone through the phase of just like, oh, gotta get these trail, gotta get that trail done, gotta get this trail done. I think back to that trail and I think back to those moments of just taking it day by day, you know, being open to having as much fun as possible, and don't write things off, you know, that's what I would say. I would say be open to the magic, because, you know, at the end of the day, you got to have stories, and then you can come talk to Doc and tell him all about them. So that's what it is.
Hey, Lucky, earlier in the episode, I made a prediction about what your pro tip would be. Like, this is the first time I've done this. Yeah, it's the first time I've done this, and I'm going to show you my chicken scratch here, and I want you to read it if you can to the audience.
Almost getting there.
Yeah.
Being present. Being present. I mean, I don't know how you did that, but yeah, I mean, gosh, I struggle, you know, that's coming from a person who struggles with that on a day-to-day basis. I'm constantly distracted, and I'm constantly trying to find ways to get myself out of that. And yeah, I mean, you put yourself in a beautiful place amongst beautiful people, you know, you did all the work to get there. Let it do the work for you. You know, it's all there. Be open to it, and don't try and force your way through it and write your own destiny, you know?
Yep. Well said. Well said. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Lucky. Want to thank him for joining us this week. Lucky, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Doc. On Instagram, it's Spirit of Dylan. I've got a website, just Google it. And on YouTube, Dylan Harris Films. And I'd really appreciate support there. That's where I'm trying to independently produce films and tell stories that I think are important, that athletes care about, and less about what the brands want to tell and push. And so I'd really appreciate support there.
Yes. And again, I want to emphasize, Dylan knows what he's doing. These are high quality. So again, check out his YouTube channel and enjoy.
Thanks so much, Doc.
You got it. All right. Remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmuir@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
Lucky, this is right up your alley. We're also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, movie, documentary, some sort of outdoor adventure media that will keep our listeners connected to the trail. Call this our Adventure Media Recommendation. What do you have for us?
Wow. All right. I'm going to spit out a couple. So The Alpinist, that one's pretty well known. If you haven't seen that yet, I don't know what you're doing. Go watch it, and then watch it again the next night, and then watch it again the next night. I personally think, I don't know, all things are going to connect differently. You know, don't kill me if you don't think it's great, but man, what a well done story. And it's so inspiring. It's going to get you. That one connected with me big time. One that's maybe a little lesser known, this is the last one I'll do. It's called 180 Degrees South. A beautiful story. It's a reenactment of a trip that Yvon Chouinard and Doug Tompkins did back in the day. And it's the film that basically made me pick up a camera. Jeff Johnson, he was the first full-time photographer signed to Patagonia. And he's an incredible storyteller, and it's just wholesome, and it makes you itch for your next adventure. So I'd say that's a good one.
Excellent recommendations on both those. Nice job.
What have we not asked you?
And before we wrap things up, just one more segment for you called What Have We Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About? What do we miss tonight?
Oh, honestly, like, I love the way you structured this. I mean, I think we covered so many things. It was just, yeah, it's been a pleasure having the conversation. I can't think of much, honestly. I think you did a great job. And honestly, I'm going to take you up on, like, if a year goes by and you haven't hit me up for that second podcast, I'm going to come reaching out to you. So you'll have to stay tuned for that next time.
Absolutely. Sounds good. That is a wrap from the John Freaky Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Lucky?
Hey, shout out to my beautiful wife who couldn't be here this weekend. She is a nurse. The nursing industry is a crazy place to be right now. The medical industry in general and being in the hospitals is a tough place to be. You know, all these people want is to be appreciated. A lot of them are working their butts off in there. And so I always kind of say she's my hero. I'm out here making films. She goes into work and saves lives and then comes home and wants to cook dinner and relax. I mean, it just, I don't know. So anyways, shout out to her.
Big shout out to Mrs. Lucky. Doing a great job. All right. Hey, thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. Doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if you woke up that morning to a church full of strangers. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.